For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It's November the 25th. November 25th. And we are in Parashas Bamidbar, and we are on page 732, the beginning of Perek Beis, chapter 2. We went through a lot of the numbers last week, and here the Torah repeats all of those numbers, and this time does it in groups of three, dividing the 12 Shvatim, the 12 tribes, into four groups, each consisting of three tribes, and setting them up on every direction of the Mishkan, and this is the way that they're going to camp. So, like last week, we're not going to read through all of the Psukim because they become repetitive, but we will read the beginning and parts of it. Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe and to Aaron, saying, Ish al diglo v'osos leves avosam, each man on his flag in osos. And osos is a sign. And the way they translate it here is?
Insignia.
Okay. Leves avosam, according to the father's homes, houses. Yachanu b'nei Yisrael, the Jews should camp. Mineged saviv lo'omo yachanu, across, around the Olmoed, the Mishkan, they should camp. We mentioned already that that this system that the Torah is saying over here was already foreshadowed by Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov instructed his sons that when they were to carry his coffin from Mitzrayim up to Canaan to bury him in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, that they should do so carrying the pallbearers would be the sons of Yaakov, and they should do so in the manner the Torah is going to set them up over here. Three on every side of his coffin, and that they should be set up the way it says over here, that Yehuda would be on the east, along with Yisachar and Zevulun, and then Reuven would be in the south, along with Shimon and Gad, etc. The same way that we have it set up here. And we learned last week also that Yaakov instructed that Levi should not carry, because Levi would eventually carry the Aron, the Ark, and therefore he should not carry Yaakov's coffin. And Yosef should not carry, because Yosef is a king. And in their stead, Menashe and Ephraim should carry. So that's what it means over here. Osos, according to even though they translate it as insignia, but it means according to the signs, it means the signs that were already established by Yaakov Avinu back in Parshas Vayechi. In addition, we know that the flags were different colors. There was a flag, there were four different camps, and each camp had its own flag. And Rashi tells us that the color of the flag corresponded to the color of the stone that particular tribe had on the choshen, on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. So we know that the Kohen Gadol had 12 stones. He actually had two more, but on the choshen itself there were 12 stones. And we know that each stone had a name of a different tribe on under it, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, etc. And the colors of the stones were reflected in the colors of these flags.
But if the Choshen had Levi, and here you have...
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. That's a good question. That there you have Levi is one of the... Levi and Yosef are both in the Choshen. And here you have neither Levi nor Yosef, you'll have Ephraim and Menashe. What I suspect happened is, it's only the color of the flag. The flag is the leader of that particular, there were only four flags. There was the flag of Yehuda, the flag of Reuven, the flag of Ephraim, and the flag of Dan. So I suspect happened is that Ephraim used the color of Yosef, since he's representing Yosef. That's what I suspect it was. But that's a very good point.
Actually, there's a whole explanation here of all the colors.
It goes through the colors here?
Yeah.
Okay.
It even says Ephraim's was with black.
It says the name. Okay, there's a medrash. Good. Okay. Excellent. The Torah then says, we'll read the first part over here. It says, "Va'achonim kedma mizracha, the ones who encamped on the east. Dagal machane Yehuda, letzivo sama, was the flag of the camp of Yehuda according to their hosts. V'nasili v'nei Yehuda, and the leader of Yehuda was Nachshon ben Aminadav." That he was already listed before, and he's the head of Yehuda. Utsvao uvkudehem, and his hosts and their numbers are Ba'avishi Melafeshmeos. They were 74,600, which is a repeat of what we had before as the number of Yehuda. Vachonim Allah, and those who encamped with him or on him, Matei Yisachar was the camp of Yisachar, the tribe of Yisachar. V'nasili v'nei Yisachar, Nisan al ben Suar. And the leader of Yisachar was Nisan al ben Suar, also listed before. Utsvao uvkudav, his host and his number, Arba'a v'chamishim elef arba meos, 54,400, also listed before. And the second tribe that was in the flag of Yehuda, Matei Zevulun, that was the tribe of Zevulun, Venasili Vnei Zevulun, Eliyahu ben Chelon. His leader was Eliyahu ben Chelon. Utsvauv Kudav, his host and his number, Shiva Vachamishim Elef Arbameos, 57,400. Now here, the Torah tells us the aggregate of those three tribes. All of the numbers of the camp of Yehuda, meaning if you add together Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zevulun, you get Ma'as Elef Ushmonim Elef Esheshes Alafim Barbameos Letzivosam, 186,400, according to their hosts. Rishona Yisau, they traveled first. We'll explain that in a few moments. We'll have to go through what that means, they traveled first. Now we have Dago Machane Reuven. Next comes the camp, the flag of the camp of Reuven. Teimana, they were on the south. And then the Torah does the same thing as it did before, counting up the three tribes that are with Reuven. You have Reuven, Shimon, and Gad. And Reuven, 46,500. Shimon, 59,300. Gad, 45,650. It adds them all up together. If you skip to the end of this paragraph, Pasuk Tez Zayin, verse 16. Kol ha-pekudim l'machane Reuven, all of the numbers for the camp of Reuven, ma'as elef ve'achad v'chamishim elef ve'arba meos v'chamishim l'tzivosav, 151,450. Ushniim yisau, they would travel second. And then, since the Torah is discussing traveling, even though the Jews are not traveling at this time, the Jews will not travel until we get to Parshas Bahaloscha, which is a couple of parshas from here. Mm-hmm. So for us, that's going to take, a couple months, right? But since we're discussing the order of travel, therefore the Torah mentions over here, V'nasa oel moed machane halavim besocha machanos, that the oel moed, the Mishkan, would travel, that is, the camp of the Levim, within the Machanos, Besocha Machanos, in the midst of the camps. Kasher Yachanu Kein Yisau, just as they encamped, so they traveled. That's a very important phrase. Just as they encamped, so they traveled. We're going to come back to that phrase in Pasuk Yudzayin, verse 17. Ish Al Yado L'Diglehem, each man on his, literally means his hand, but it means everyone at his place, according to their degel, according to their flag, according to their banner. Then we move on to degel machane Ephraim. Now you have the flag, the banner of the camp of Ephraim, and it goes through the leaders of Ephraim, Menashe and Binyamin, who made up this particular camp, and they travel, letzivo sam, according to their hosts, yama, to the west, as it says in Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18. They were on the west side of the Mishkan, and then it adds up the numbers. Ephraim is 40,500, and Menashe 32,200, and Binyamin 35,400. And when you add all that together, you get to the end of this paragraph, Pasuk Chavdal, verse 24. Kol ha-pekudim ha-machane Ephraim, all of the numbers for the camp of Ephraim, ma'as elef u'shmonas alafim u'meyal letzivosam, 108,100, u'shlishim yiso, they travel third. Finally, dagol machane Dun, safona letzivosam, next came the banner of the camp of Dun on the north, according to their hosts, and you have the final three Shvatim, that's Dun, Naphtali, and Gad, or I'm sorry, Dun, Naphtali, and Asher. Dun, Asher, Naphtali is the way it says it over here. And again, you add them up. Dun is 62,700, Asher 41,500, and Naphtali 53,400. So you add them all up, and on page 736, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31, at the end of this paragraph, Kol ha-pekudim l'machane Dun, all of the numbers for the banner or the camp of Dun, ma'as elef v'shiva v'chamishim elef v'shesh meos, 157,600, lo'achrona yis'u l'diglehem, they would travel last. It does not say they traveled fourth, it says they traveled last. Yehuda traveled first, Reuven traveled second, Ephraim traveled third, and Dun traveled last, according to their diglehem, according to their banners. Eile Pasuk Lamed Beis, verse 32. These are the numbers, the count of the Bnei Yisrael according to their father's houses. Kol Pekudei Machanos Letzivosam, all of the number of the camps according to their hosts. What was the total number? Again, we had this number before. Sheish Meos Elef Ushloshes Alafim V'Chamesh Meos V'Chamishim, 603,550. And the Torah here repeats, "V'halevim lo haspaktu b'soch b'nei Yisrael." The Levim were not counted amongst the b'nei Yisrael. Kashetziva Hashem es Moshe, just as Hashem had commanded Moshe. V'yasu b'nei Yisrael kohol hashetziva Hashem es Moshe. The Jews did exactly what Hashem commanded Moshe. Kein chanu l'diglehem, so they encamped according to their banners. V'chein oso, and so they traveled. Ish l'mishpachosav al beis avosav, each man according to his families. According to their father's houses. We had already in Sefer Vayikra an incident that took place because of these camps. They camped, they did exactly what Hashem told them to do, and there was one bad incident because of this. Who remembers the bad incident that occurred because of the segregation of the Shvatim of the tribes into their set special camps?
One that didn't have a tribe.
Right. So back in Parashas Emor, we have the boy, he wasn't a man, but he was born from a Jewish mother, Shlomo Bastivi's son, and an Egyptian father, therefore he had no camp. It's important to note he wasn't the only one who had no camp. There were the Erev Rav, the Egyptians who had joined in. They also didn't have a camp. They weren't of any tribe. But he insisted that he should encamp in Dun's territory because his mother was from Dun. And the Torah reports that somebody protested and there was a court case and he lost the court case. And because of that, he was Mevarech Hashem, which is a euphemism for cursing God, and he was put to death. That was a result of these separate camps. Later on, when we get to the end of the 40 years in the Midbar, then these camps become more significant because they represent who gets a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Those who were part of a camp also meant getting a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Those who were not part of a camp did not have a portion in Eretz Yisrael, and that leads, as Mrs. Kaiser said under her breath just now, that leads to the famous story of Benos Tzalafchad, the daughters of Tzalafchad. We will tackle that story when we get there. That is an interesting, that's a whole discussion, a very interesting study when we get to that part of the Torah. But right now, we're dealing with in the Midbar, in the wilderness, so there is no portion of Eretz Yisrael to speak of at this point, and rather it is only about their camping where they are. Now the Gemara, yes?
It seems like a little counterintuitive, but if they're going to Eretz Yisrael, they're going in a northern, western direction.
Northeast.
Yeah. The tribe to the north is the west tribe.
Yeah.
So all the others have to go through him.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that. You're asking a good question. The question is, what did it look like when they traveled? We're going to talk about that. That's why I highlighted certain parts when we read. We're going to see that that's a major discussion. Before we get to that, the Gemara says in the Maseches Erevin in the Yerushalmi, the Gemara says that when they tried to set up the Beis Hamikdash, when they finally got to Eretz Yisrael and they set up the Beis Hamikdash, it was very difficult to position the Beis Hamikdash exactly the way it's supposed to be positioned, which is that the Beis Hamikdash faces west, as we know. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, is in the west. The main entrance to the Beis Hamikdash is in the east. And in order to situate it exactly right, it took a lot of effort to figure out the exact way to build the Beis Hamikdash so that the directions would be perfect. The Gemara then asks, then if it's so difficult to figure out exactly the directions, then how did they know their directions when they were in the wilderness, in the Midbar? How did they figure out what direction was what? So did they have a compass? Like, how did they do? So the Gemara says, the Aron did it for them. When they encamped and they set up the Mishkan, the Aron, when they would put it down, would on its own swivel to be facing the perfect direction, which is that the Aron is on the west side of the Mishkan, and its opening, meaning the Kruvim, and the Aron would face west-east, east-west. That's the way it would face. And the Badim, the poles of the Aron, would run east-west. So they would know that that's how to set up the Mishkan. So the Aron itself would assist them in knowing what were the exact directions that they needed to be, and then from there they would extrapolate out, and after, of course, they would construct the Mishkan, but then Yehuda would end up on the east, and Reuven on the south, and Ephraim on the west, and Dan in the north. They did that based on the Aron. So it's not just that we encamped around the Aron. The Aron was the center. The Mishkan was the center of our existence, which is the way it's supposed to be. But in addition to that, it even informed the Jews where they're supposed to be, where they're supposed to encamp. It helped them situate their camp. Now, the traveling of the Jews is a matter of debate of exactly how it happened. And this is what we're going to focus on now. Before we do so, I would like you to please hold the place here and take a look at Parshas Bahaloscha. The reason we have to jump ahead is for certain pieces of information which are listed there and not here. When the Jews first traveled, and that is when we leave Har Sinai. All this is happening at Har Sinai. And when we leave Har Sinai on the 20th of Iyar of the second year, that would be on the bottom of page 782. That's the beginning of the paragraph. The truth is, we want to look on page 784, the next page, but the paragraph begins on the bottom line of 782. We have in Parshas Bamidbar that we have five different groups that traveled in the following order: the camp of Yehuda, the camp of Reuven, the Mishkan, the camp of Ephraim, and the camp of Dan. That's the way it's listed in Bamidbar. Here in Bahaloscha, we get a little bit more information, and it tells us in Pasuk Tes Zion, Tes Yud Zion, verse 17. After talking about the banner and the camp of Yehuda traveling, then it says the Huran HaMishkan. The Mishkan was then dismantled. V'nasu v'nei Gershonu v'nei Merari, and then the children of Gershon and the children of Merari would travel. Nosei HaMishkan, those who carried the Mishkan. We know that Levi has three sons. Levi is divided up into three branches: Gershon, Kehas, and Merari. Gershon and Merari would travel not after the camp of Ephraim, after the camp of Reuven, which is what it says in Parashas Bamidbar, but rather they would travel between camps 1 and 2, after Yehuda, before Reuven. Then here in Baaloscha, on page 784, it goes through the camp of Reuven, which is the next camp to travel. And then if you skip ahead to Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21, after Reuven travels, V'nasu ha-kehasim nosei ha-mikdash. Then the kehasim, those of kehas, would travel, those who carried the holy utensils, including the aron. V'ikimu es ha-mishkan ad bo'am. And they would establish the mishkan by the time they came. So when it says in Parashas Bamidbar that between camps 2 and 3, between Reuven and Ephraim, the camp of the Levim would travel, we see in Baaloscha that does not mean all of the Levim. In fact, it doesn't even mean the majority of Levim. It means those Levim that were carrying the utensils, the holy utensils, the kahas part of Levi, they would travel between camps 2 and 3. But the rest of them, Gershon and Merari, who were carrying the actual Mishkan, they would travel between camps 1 and 2. And it seems the reason is so that they would set up the Mishkan prior to the kahas people getting there. That's what Rashi says in Parashas Baaloscha. Rashi tells us, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Rashi tells us, "Bnei Gershon or Bnei Merari." I'm looking in Pasuk Chafal, verse 21. "Shayu kodmim lahem masash neged degalim." They were ahead of them. "Hayu mekaymen es hamishkan." They would mekaymen es hamishkan. They would put up the mishkan, and that way it would be set up when they would get there.
But you just said the Aron showed them the direction.
Oh, very excellent question. Okay, let me read the rest of this. Very good question. The Yerushalmi points this out, what you just said. Let's read the rest of this first. Kishahaya ha'anan shochein, when the cloud would rest, v'simen achaniya nira b'degel machane Yehuda, then the sign of encamping would be seen over the tribe of Yehuda. We'll describe that in a moment. V'hem chonim, they would encamp. V'adayim b'nei kahas b'ayim me'achareyem, and the children of Kahas were still coming im shnei degalim ha'achronim, with the last two flags, the last two camps. During that time, hayu b'nei Gershon b'nei Merari mikimen es hamikdash, during that time, then the Gershon and Merari branches of the Levim would put up the Mishkan. U'cheshebayim b'nei Kahas, when the b'nei Kahas would come, motzim oso al mechono, they would find it already established. And then they would put the Aron and everything else into the Mishkan. So as Doreen said, that makes sense, right? That they would, that you have the structure is already put up, and then they would come along with the Aron. Now the Yerushalmi that I was referring to seems to disagree with this explanation and understands that they wouldn't actually put up the Mishkan until the people of Kahas would get there, so that they could use the Aron as figuring exactly how to set up the Mishkan. What I suspect is that they're both true, and you can make them both work out, which is they would establish the Mishkan basically, but they wouldn't lock it in place until the Aron would show up, and then they would still be able to move it around a little bit. That's what I assume was the case. So what we see here in Baaloscha that we don't see in Bamidbar is that the Levim actually did not all travel together, that they were actually in two different shifts. So that's an important thing. The way they knew they were going to travel, which again we're going to learn about in Parshas Baaloscha, is through the Anan, through the clouds, the cloud of the Ananei Kavod, the cloud of glory, that the cloud would rise up and that would show everybody it was time to travel. And it would be over the tribe of Yehuda, where it would move up in the air, which would indicate it's time to travel. And then they would proceed to do this system of the order of travel. Tribe of Yehuda, then Gershon and Merari of the Levim, then the flag of Reuven, then Kahas of the Levim, then the flag of Ephraim, and then the flag of Dan. That's the way they would go. The way they would know that it was time to rest was, again, the cloud would show that it was time to stop, and wherever the cloud would descend over the tribe of Yehuda, they now knew that's where they're going to stop, and they were going in camp. Remember, they never knew when they would travel, they never knew how long the travel time would be, and they never knew where they would camp. That was all open-ended. It could be at any moment that the cloud would say it's time to go. Throughout the 40 years of wandering in the Midbar, as we will see later on, there were times when they were in one place for a very long time. In fact, they were in one place for 19 years. So one place they didn't move at all for 19 years. And other times, they were in a place for one day. They would get there, and the next day it was time to travel again.
Is it like an Amunah test?
Yeah, absolutely. It was an Amunah test. Can you imagine? Not knowing when to pack your bags? And you get lulled into a sense of like, we're not going anywhere, you're there, and then all of a sudden, boom, we're going. It's for sure an Amunah test. Gather up everybody, gather up the kids, put it all together. I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of work. So this was the way it was set up. Now, let's put this on the board so we can visualize it. So we have the Mishkan. The Mishkan is in the middle. Now, we have not yet discussed where each of the Levim resided, because they also resided in different places. We haven't discussed that yet. But we have here on the east side, we'll just put it this way, east and south and west and north. On the east side, you have Moshe and the Kohanim, which is Aaron and his sons. Down here you have Kehas. Here you have Gershon. And here you have Merari. Okay, but that we're going to find out later in Parshas Bamidbar. We're going to get to that, not today, but we'll get to that within the next week or two. On the east side, of course, we have Yehuda. And Yehuda has with him Yisachar and Zebulun. And the number, of course, is 186,400. Let's put it this way, see it better. 186,400. That's how many men, 20 and up, on this side of the Mishkan. Down here, on the south side, you have Reuven. And Reuven has with him Shimon and Gad. And the number is 151,450. On the west side, we have Ephraim. And with him is, of course, Menashe, but also Binyamin. And the number is 108,100. And in the north side, we have Dan. With him is Asher and Naphtali. And his number is 157,600. And of course, the total number, as was said before, 603,550. Okay. Now, there's a very important rule about the Torah repeating the numbers over here. We're going to talk more about this when we get a little further in Parshas Bamidbar. It's not time tonight to do this. When we get there, I'm going to tell you actually a very funny story about numbers and Parshas Bamidbar in one of my discussions with the Rosh Yeshiva of Weinberg's Haracha, in which I came out looking a little silly, but it's a very funny story. But I'm going to save that. This way I know you'll come back. I'll save that for another week, because we haven't learned enough yet to talk about that story. But The rule with the numbers is that if the Torah repeats everything, because all these numbers were said before. Now, the total number was not said before, but the individual numbers of each of the tribes was said before, and the total number of the Jews was said before. But Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, that was all said before. So there is rhyme and reason to why the Torah says the numbers all over again. We already knew that Yehuda had the number that it says in the Torah. You know, we already knew the 74,600. But we knew that already. So why does it have to say it all over again? over here, and Yisachar and Zvulun, why is it necessary? So the Torah, when it says various numbers and adds them up together for us, that what the Torah is saying is that the sum is greater than its parts. The total is greater than the individual numbers. So that if even though we could have added up the numbers, the Torah tells you that Yehuda has 74,600, and Yisachar has 54,400, and Zvulun has 57,400, we could add that up ourselves and arrive at 186,400. We know how to do that. But the Torah is telling us that when you add up those numbers together, the total is more important or is greater than the individuals. And then, when you take these four numbers, 186,400, 151,450, 108,100, 157,600, you add those together, you'll get 603,550. That's what you'll get. You don't need the Torah to do that for you. We all know how to add. But what the Torah is telling you is that when you add these numbers together, that total number is greater than each of the individual numbers. So what the Torah has done over here is it's taken each of the tribes, which they themselves are important, and then grouped them into groups of three. When you add those numbers together, each group of three is greater than each third of itself, so that the Machane of Ephraim, that the camp of Ephraim is greater than Ephraim individually, Menasheh individually, Binyamin individually. When you add them all together, you have a greater sum. And then when you take the four camps and add them all together, you also have a greater sum. So that's what you have. Now, they traveled. So we learned that in travel order, Yehuda is first. He's one. Then comes Kahas, we're going to call him 1A, because he's not a whole camp in and of himself. I'm sorry, I did that wrong. Not Kahas. Kahas is later. Merari and Gershon. Gershon, we'll put it over here. 1A is Gershon and Merari. They would travel next, carrying the Mishkan. Then would come number 2 is Reuven. And then comes Kahas, and he's going to be 2A. Then comes Ephraim, and then comes Dan. There is a difference of opinion in what did it look like when they traveled. Did they travel Kiteva? Teva means a box. Did they travel the way it looks here, meaning that Yehuda remained in the east, and Reuben remained in the south, and Ephraim remained in the west, and Dan remained in the north? Or did they travel ke-kora, like a beam, meaning in a straight line? That even though this is the way they camped, but when they traveled, they ended up following each other, one behind the other. Yehuda first, Reuben second, Ephraim third, Dan fourth. That's the discussion amongst the sages of the Gemara in the Yerushalmi. So, if you look at the pasuk that we highlighted when we read it, on page 734, pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, it says that the Omoi, the Mishkan, traveled the camp of the Levim. Kasha Yachanu Kain Yiso. Just as they camped, so they traveled. The implication there is that they traveled looking the same as they camped. So that they did not line up one behind the other, but rather Yehuda remained in the east, and Reuven remained in the south, Ephraim in the west, Dan in the north. We're all wondering how that's possible. We'll discuss that in a moment. Well, let's first.
Such a swath of land with.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll have to talk about that. It's the middle of the desert.
I'm kidding.
Okay.
Go up,
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
If they're leaving before them.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that.
If they go north.
We'll talk about it. Now, the one that says, that's one opinion. The other opinion says, no, they traveled in a straight line. Well, where does that come from? Where would they, what would indicate that in the psukim? Where would you see that? So that is not derived from here. That is derived from Bahaloscha, where they actually travel. I'm sorry to send you back there. You can just take my word for it if you want. But if you want to see it. Again, page 784. Pasuk Chaf Hei, verse 25. Vinasa Dego Machane Vine Dun, the camp of the banner of Dun would travel. We know they traveled last. Mi'asef L'chola Machanos, the gatherer, how do they translate it here?
The rear guard.
The rear guard, okay. Mi'asef means to gather. Of all of the camps, they will be the next one to travel. Well, the rear guard implies that they're in the back of everybody else. And in fact, Chazal tell us that Dan had a lot of people. He was the second largest tribe. And Dan, the tribe of Dan, were known for the mitzvah of
picking up, being in the army.
Hashavas Aveda. Returning lost objects, yes.
They collect everything that got dropped along the way.
As Rashi says, Vafishaya Shifto Shel Dun Meruba Uchlusin, the tribe of Dun had many people. Haya Nosea Bachron, they traveled last. Fachomi Shaya Ma'abe Davar, anybody who lost anything, Haya Machziro Lo, he would return it to him. So we know that when people travel, it's very common to leave things behind. My mother-in-law coined the phrase many, many years ago, after we would leave, that she would go around the house and find all the Pransky droppings and then somehow mail them to us or whatever it is. So when people travel, they leave things behind. That's what happens. So the Dun would be in the back and they would clean up as they went along. Anybody left something behind and they would perform the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. So that implies that Dun is walking behind everybody else where they walked. And as if Dun didn't go physically behind where they were, how would the people of Dun find all the lost objects of everybody else? So it seems that they traveled in a straight line and that Dun was in the back.
And
so
the Aruba would be behind them?
What's that?
The Aruba would be behind them?
The Torah doesn't discuss where they were. I'm not sure. It's a good question. So, of course, if we have two opinions and there are two different psukim, then you have to make the various psukim work for both opinions. So again, we have, let's go back to our pasuk over here. We're not going to go back to Balosva tonight. That's it. So we have the pasuk on 734. The way they camped, so they traveled. That sounds like they traveled in the way they looked here, not in a straight line. And then we have Dun being behind all the camps, which implies that they traveled in a straight line.
But in both ways, the Mishkan's in the middle.
Okay,
but
so
Dun could have spread out.
What's that?
Dun could have spread out.
Okay,
so that
both of you are correct. Good, excellent. So the Gemara, very good teamwork. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says that according to the one who says that they traveled in a straight line, how do they explain this pasuk here that the way they camped, so they traveled? So the answer is what Mrs. Lewis just said, that the way they camped, that the Mishkan was in the middle, so they traveled. And it wasn't really the Mishkan, it was the Aron. But nevertheless, the center of our lives is the Mishkan, is the Aron, is serving Hashem. That's the way we camped. That's the way we traveled. Even if we traveled in a straight line, but the Mishkan, the main part of the Mishkan, the Aron, was right in the middle. According to the one who says that they traveled in a square, the way we see it on the board. So then, how will they explain that Dun picked up all the lost objects? So as Mrs. Winberg just said, Dun, because they had so many people, would spread out. And even though the bulk of Dun would be in one place, but they would kind of spread themselves around the camp as they traveled and pick up lost objects as they went. So the main body of it stayed in the north. But they had, there were a lot of people, so they were able to kind of like send them out and
Probably sent the kids.
Right, and
right, but
cover the area.
But if they're going in the northerly direction.
Okay, now that we have to take, that we take care of. Okay, now, the directions.
Was it only done, or was it done Asherah?
It seems it was only done. It seems so. Now, if they traveled in a straight line, so then it really wouldn't matter what direction they were traveling. Yehuda would lead off, and he would begin to travel. If they're traveling east, it makes it very easy. He starts to travel, followed by the Gershon and Merari contingent, then followed by Reuven, then followed by Kahas, and then Ephraim, and then Dan would follow suit. And they would just get it lined up. So that makes sense. Even if they weren't traveling east, north or south, even if they're traveling west, it's a little more complicated. Yehuda would have to somehow get to that side of the camp. I imagine they would circle around. It's hard to imagine they would go straight through. They'd have to walk through an entire 108,000 people. Like, it doesn't make sense to do that.
We're still packing up.
Right, and we haven't even started the travel yet. Right. So that would make sense. If they traveled as they camped, so what does that mean? How does that work? There are various opinions about this, about how it would work. The what I always assume to be true is one of the opinions, and that is that it didn't look like this when they were traveling. It just means that Yehuda would maintain his easterly position, Reuven would maintain his southern position, and Ephraim would maintain his western position, and Dan would maintain the northern position, which means that, let's say they were traveling east, which is the easiest one to envision. Yehuda would begin to travel. So Yehuda would now be over here, and at that point, I'm not sure how Gershon Merari would do it, let's ignore that for the time being, then Reuven would travel. So now, they're all traveling east. So now, Reuven is here, and Yehuda is here.
Yeah.
Well then, Ephraim would travel. So he would travel. Then, Yehuda is here, and Reuven is here, and Ephraim is here, and then Dan would travel. So they weren't in a box per se, but they maintained their position.
That's hard to explain if you're going west or
north. Yeah. East is easiest to understand for the time being. So they would be stretch out the picture. That's essentially just stretch it out. That's what it would look like. If they were traveling north, so the same thing could be said, or south. Yehuda would travel north. So Yehuda would now be here. Now this is a little complicated. How Reuven would go north, I guess he'd have to go around, and then he'd have to go around and then kind of switch back into his position. You know, kind of go around and then be here. And then they would be further up, and then Ephraim would start to travel, and they would be even further up, and then Dan would travel. Similarly, if they were traveling west, I assume what would happen is Yehuda would have to somehow circle around and begin to travel.
But circle around this way, then they follow suit.
Yeah, sort of. The problem is that when they go west, you're going to end up having Yehuda on the west and Ephraim on the east. They're going to reverse their positions.
Mm-hmm.
So that shouldn't be. So I don't know what would happen. Traveling west is a problem in this depiction.
And for Dan to get north, he's going to have to go through.
He's going to have to go through. Yeah, he's going to have to go through. Right. Then they're going to reverse positions. Right.
It's like a band. A football band.
Right.
You know how they go through
right.
each other.
So it's hard to understand. It's hard to understand exactly how that would work. Now, others understand it, that it doesn't mean, according to this opinion, that they remained in their positions, it doesn't mean that Yehuda traveled first. It means Yehuda got prepared to travel first. So Yehuda was totally ready to leave. You know, the car is packed.
Mm.
Right, the kids are in the car seats. And then they waited. Can you imagine?
A long time. Are we there yet?
Right. And then Reuven would start to pack, and then Ephraim would start to pack, and then Dan would start to pack, and then finally they'd be ready to go. And then they would travel whichever direction they were going, they would remain in these positions. So that's hard to understand. It's hard to understand, first of all, what's the point in delaying the packing. It's one thing if you want to travel in a particular order, but if you're not traveling, so what's the point in that? And in addition, it says they would travel first, travel second. So it's hard to understand it that way. I wonder, again, putting the two opinions together, I wonder if the answer to this question is yes, you would stretch out the picture as we described before. So that if you're going east, it makes sense. But if you're going in any other direction, they wouldn't reverse their positions. So that if they're going north, for example, Yehuda would travel first. In this case, Reuven really couldn't travel second because that would put him on top of Dan. He would be north and Dan would be south. That can't be. So in that case, Reuven would just get ready to leave but wouldn't actually leave. Then Ephraim would leave and then Dan would leave along with Reuven together, maintaining their north-south position. Maybe also going west, the same thing. In that case, Yehuda couldn't really travel first because then he would end up on the wrong side of Ephraim. So Yehuda would have to pack up and get ready to leave, but not actually leave. Reuven would then actually leave. Then Ephraim would leave and Yehuda along with him, and then Dan would leave. Something like that.
But Dan, if he's last, then you can't have Reuven waiting for Dan to move.
Right. That would mess up the Maaseh.
Could it be not literal that they traveled as they camped with the Kavana and with the Calmness? And not necessarily
That's the other opinion that says that it just means that they prepared to leave. They didn't actually leave. Then that's what it could be. It could be something like that. So it's unclear exactly. This is a difficult thing. The Mefarshim struggle with this, exactly how to work it out. Again, in the situation where they're traveling in a straight line, it's easier to work it out. Just conceptually, you can think of it better. Otherwise, it's more difficult to picture how it worked. But we get the idea, at least, even though we don't have it fully worked out, of the traveling that the Jews did.
Could it be a nace because they had everything flattened out for them and the scorpions and stuff?
Okay, so
the land just kind of...
Yeah, so that's the next point. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nivra. Who brought about needing a whole swath of land? That's who you brought up. So of course they did. I mean, no matter which way you say they traveled, even if they traveled in a straight line, you're talking about a group of over 100,000, 150,000 men over 20 years old. So that means you're talking about a men, women, and children each camp of somewhere around 500,000 people. Well, 500,000 people is a large area. No matter how they travel, it's a large area. So they're on foot, they're traveling, and so the Anane Kavod, the clouds flattened everything.
Oh, and the flocks and everything. Where were they?
It had a whole bunch of stuff. It was a huge, you know, when you picture the Jews leaving Egypt, so a few million people, and they were not yet in camps, so it was more haphazard, you would think. And it just millions of people traveling. It's just so the clouds were significant because it wasn't just that the clouds made it an easier ride. So they flattened it. It was paved. It was no snakes, no scorpions, etc. Besides all that, no potholes. So that's great. But besides that, simply the area needed for travel at least became defined. Because the cloud only flattened out the area that was needed for travel. If the cloud didn't make areas that weren't needed for travel flattened out, so it kind of defined the area. The road was defined. When you're traveling in the wilderness, there is no road. You just pick your way. But when you have the cloud defining everything for you, so it's like having a paved road, and it's prepared for you, then you can kind of figure out where you're supposed to be.
So I know that the humans didn't have to make pit stops along the way, but what about all the animals? Like the one poor Don, are they walking on stuff that the other people's animals?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know. The people did not have an issue with that. The people, see, let's make this clear. We're going to learn later in the Chumash that the mun did not produce any waste. That was one of the miracles of the mun. It produced no waste. It was perfectly calibrated for the human body. There was no waste produced by mun. So therefore, people did not have to relieve themselves. But they did. They were able to eat other things. And therefore, it wasn't like no one ever relieved themselves. But it was at least unusual enough that it did not become a big issue. That's correct. The animals, that's a good question. I don't know what happened with the animals. That's a good point. When you travel with animals, then that's a natural consequence. So I don't know how that worked. That's a good question. It could be that was part of what happened with the clouds, that was taken care of. It's possible, but I don't know. I don't know how that worked. We know that, we know the clouds not only helped them by paving the road, it also made their clothing as if it was freshly laundered, and their clothing was and their shoes did not wear out. everything grew with them. So those were also miraculous. And that was a function of the clouds. So it is possible that it took care of that issue as well, but I don't know. I don't know how that worked. The main point though that you see from all of this is that the no matter how they were doing it, whether they were camped or whether they were traveling, the central part of the nation was the Mishkan / the Aron. That we rallied around that all the time. And this is the way Hashem set us up at Har Sinai, and this continued for 40 years. When we entered Eretz Yisrael, just think about that for a minute, the transition going from the Midbar to Eretz Yisrael, I think that, at least in my mind, the greatest transitional point was getting off of Mun and now having to grow your food, which essentially means working for a living. Yeah. Right? Until in the Midbar, we didn't work for a living. We were doing whatever Hashem told us to do, and we were eating Mun. So there was no need, you didn't have to pay for a home, you didn't have to buy food, you didn't have to buy clothing, there was no need for commerce. You were what you were. That doesn't mean there was no commerce, but it was not necessary. Water was plentiful, you weren't paying for utilities, all the basic costs, there were no tuition costs, all the basic costs that we see and know and we deal with on a daily basis, they didn't have those things. And there was no need to work for a living. So that was, in my mind, the most significant change, leaving the Midbar and entering Eretz Yisrael. But in addition to that, in addition to the food part of it, think of the living, the camping part of it. They had spent 40 years encamped around the Mishkan. The Mishkan is the central focus of life. When we get to Eretz Yisrael, so the Mishkan remains, of course, the central focus of life, and eventually that becomes the Beis HaMikdash, but you're not living right there anymore. You're spread out, and you're involved in your field, involved in your community, involved in your neighborhood. You're not right there at the Mishkan anymore. So that also is a significant transition. And Hashem had us that in our fledgling years, we were always around the Mishkan. Now, how close were we? What does this mean? This camp over here, what were the distances? So the Gemara tells us, we know, that Tchum Shabbos, the distance you can travel on Shabbos, outside of a inhabited area, is 2,000 amos. We've talked about this before. 2,000 amos is approximately a kilometer. That's approximately how far you can go, is 1 kilometer outside of an inhabited area on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that they had to be able, they didn't have to be able, that Hashem wanted them to be able to get to the Mishkan on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. They shouldn't be limited and not be able to go to the Mishkan on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Therefore, the camps were no more than a kilometer away from the Mishkan. Now, when you have a lot of people, so those people, each individual person may be a little further or closer, but within a meal, within a kilometer of the Mishkan, that's how far apart they were. The distance of Tchum Shabbos, of the traveling of Shabbos, is a kilometer when you get to your neighborhood's limits, meaning when you get to that last house in your neighborhood, from there you have a kilometer. So let's take Reuven. The beginning of the camp of Reuven was no more than a kilometer away from the Mishkan. The rest of it could be further away, but they were able to travel on Shabbos to the Mishkan. Those were the distances. But a kilometer is walkable. It's not a huge distance. Even several kilometers is not a huge distance. They were within walking distance of the Mishkan on Shabbos. Everybody could daven at the Mishkan if they wanted to on Shabbos. But once we got into Eretz Yisrael, of course, that was impossible. Only a few people lived nearby the Beis HaMikdash or wherever the Mishkan was, the Mizbeach was, but most people lived far away. Yeah.
Does the 2,000 amos end where Kehas is, not where the Mishkan is?
I think, no, you can't. If the 2,000 amos would end at Kehas, they would not be able to go any further. It doesn't restart itself. Once the 2,000 amos begins to be counted, at the end of that, that's it. You're done. So it has to get as far as the Mishkan.
Oh, if you come to another community.
Yeah, it doesn't help. It doesn't help. Right. Right.
So why does it have to be so far away? Why do you need a distance?
Why that far?
Well, because you don't want to walk. But why wouldn't Reuven just move closer, right?
Right. I think there needed to be a clear demarcation between where the camp of the Levium ended and where the camp of Reuven started. They couldn't run up against each other. And this is going to have implications for Tumah and Tahara. We're going to learn later on that various types of Tumah, we know that there's various types of Tumah, anybody who is Tameh in any way cannot go into the Mishkan. But then there are different levels of Tumah. Some types of Tumah cannot go into the Mishkan, but could go into the camp of the Levium. For instance, let's say a person is Tameh Mes. Person has come in contact with a dead body. They cannot go into the Mishkan, but they could go into the camp of the Levium. That was acceptable. Camp of the Levium would roughly be something like this. I'll be able to do this. Okay, do you get the idea? They're in the wrong place. But that would be the camp of the Levium. Other types of Tumah, you would not be able to be in the Mishkan nor in the camp of the Levium. But you could be in the camp of the Yisraelim. And then you have types of Tumah where they can't even be in the camp of the Yisraelim. For instance, someone has Tsaras and has to leave the camp of the Yisraelim. We're going to learn about these camps and the various types of Tumah when we get to Parshas Naso. We will see over there the commandment to leave the camps if a person is Tameh. I'll leave you with this one thought, though, just an interesting informational point. How does the Gemara know that if a person is Tameh Mes, has come in contact with a dead body, they're allowed to be where the Levium are? Because in Parshas Beshalach it says, Moshe took with him a very important thing,
the bones
of Yosef, with him, Emo, with him, which means they were with him in his camp. So you see, even though you're in contact with a dead body, you can be in the camp of the Levium.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.